So here's CNN saying that Abu Bakr Shawku is the face of terror. Oh, by the way, no one's ever seen his face. Well, I'm sure his wife has seen his face. He doesn't reveal his face in any of his videos. I have no idea what he looks like. He can't be the face of terror. We can't even see his face. He can be the mask of terror, but he can't be the face of terror. And Boko Haram, as it relates to Islamic terrorism, while its actions are vicious, it's no different than the Islamic terrorist groups that are terrorizing Somalia, the Sudan, Syria, Egypt, Afghanistan, Iraq. And we could go on and on. It really is no difference. They're all the same. So why would you take one person? Are we going to make this masked man, Abu Bakr, the new Osama bin Laden? Is that the idea? Are we going to make him the new Yasser Arafat? And make him the face of terror? Is that what's going to happen? As opposed to holding up a Quran and saying, this is the face of terror. We're going to have this moron out there in Nigeria be the embodiment of everything we fear? He's the boogeyman. Can't have a book as a boogeyman because that would require me to read it. But if we can make this guy the boogeyman, I don't have to read anything. All I have to do is say, yeah, he's bad. Go get him. Sick. That's what it's really all about. He's a ruthless leader with a twisted ideology. Do they know that his ideology is Islam? I mean, why not just say Islam is a twisted ideology? I mean, that's what they've written. The sadistic architect of a campaign of mayhem and misery. He's not an architect. There is nothing that he has invented. Everything he has done and is doing has been done by humankind for thousands of years. I shared with you that I'm writing a short history of Rome. And the idea of dividing women up as sex objects to be raped by troops was deployed by Rome. In fact, their first conflict in the Punic Wars against Carthage, when they were battling for an outpost on southwest Sicily. When the Romans prevailed in that battle against the Carthaginians, they killed virtually all of the men, some 30,000 of them they killed. They then took some 4,000 survivors from the civilian population, young boys typically, and they sold them into the slave markets. But they took all of the young women, all of them, and divided them among their men as sex toys, slaves, as sex slaves. Oh, yeah, that was the Republic of Rome, by the way. For those of you who advanced Republican ideas, that was the Republic of Rome. Been around a long time. Muhammad used it better probably than anyone other than the Romans. Now, the Romans weren't alone in this. There was other savage civilizations. It's just that if you want to deal with an empire, the Roman Empire was the worst at deploying these exact same tactics. Sadistic architect of mayhem and misery. Muhammad implemented them. He was good at being bad. I mean, we might as well admit he was good at being bad. And so if you wanted to have a sadistic architect that devised a campaign of mayhem and misery with a twisted ideology, the face for that would be Muhammad. That's why the cartoon that gets Muslims so agitated depicts Muhammad with a turban that has a bomb with a lit fuse. Muhammad was a sadistic architect of a twisted ideology that unleashed a campaign of mayhem and misery on the world. Statement is absolutely irrefutable. In the first 100 years of Islam, Muslim barbarians killed 200 million people. They raped as many women. They sold as many children into slavery. That's what the first Muslims did. This man is no different. Then they say, and yet very little is known about Abu Bakr Shekau, the leader of Boko Haram. Absolutely not. That's not true. He's an Islamic cleric. He didn't even he wasn't even the founder of Boko Haram. He was the number two. It was founded by an Islamic cleric that was more acclaimed, better educated than he is. Everything you want to know about Abu Bakr Shekau, it can be discovered by reading Prophet of Doom. You'll know everything there is to know about the man. There is nothing about this man that is meaningful that isn't in that book. Why? Because that book is a comprehensive presentation of Muhammad's words and deeds presented in chronological order using the five oldest Islamic sources. This man is as close to being the living incarnation of Muhammad as anyone on the planet today. They say he operates in the shadows, leaving his underlings to orchestrate his repulsive mandates. He tells you what his mandates are. Impose Sharia law. To kidnap little girls and to sell them into slavery under Allah's instructions. He's not in the shadows. He's telling you exactly what he's doing and why he's doing it. Why is CNN unwilling to listen? They say that he resurfaces every once in a while in a videotaped message to mock the impotence of the Nigerian military. The Nigerian military here has been worse than impotent. They are like the U.S. military. When it comes to Islam, the U.S. military, like the Nigerian military, is worse than impotent. Impotent would be suggest that they're incapable of doing anything that would be considered worthwhile. What's worse than impotent? Being counterproductive. America's military in Afghanistan was counterproductive. It wasn't impotent. It made a bad situation worse. America's military in Iraq wasn't impotent. It was counterproductive. It made a bad situation much worse. America's military presence in Somalia wasn't impotent. It made a bad situation worse. America's military presence in Libya wasn't impotent. It made a bad situation worse. America's military presence in Egypt is not impotent. It's just making a bad situation worse. America's military involvement in Qatar and Saudi Arabia cannot be considered impotent. No. We've contributed to making a bad situation worse. A lot of that is because you can't successfully fight a religious agenda with bullets and bombs. That was the lesson we should have learned in Vietnam. And you might say, wait a minute, you know, the North Vietnamese, they weren't religious, they were communists. Huh? Communism is part of the religion of socialist secular humanism. They were as much a religious devotee as the Muslims are today, as the Nazis were in their time. Yeah, Nazism was religion too. Hitler wrote Mein Kampf as a religion. It's a religious text. It says it's a religious text. It is a religious text. Oh, when Adam Weishaupt, who founded the Illuminati, the Order of the Illums, when he promoted his religion through Freemasonry, his goal was to create a replacement religion. The religion he hated at the time was Roman Catholicism. Hated it because they had all the power. And so he knew that if he was going to control people, he would have to have a replacement religion. He created socialist secular humanism as his replacement religion. Political correctness is its moral code. And so in Vietnam, we were up against a religious foe. We tried to beat them with bullets and bombs. Every bullet we fired, every bomb we dropped, manufactured more foe than existed before. We manufactured more of them than we killed. Same thing with Americans' drones in Pakistan and Yemen. We're manufacturing far more terrorists than we're killing. That's the reason why armies are counterproductive in this regard. There is a weapon that you can wield at a religious terrorist. Words. Tell the truth. Do your homework. Cite from their scriptural sources and use the words of their most respected scriptural sources against them. Expose who Muhammad was. Tell the truth. Do the opposite of the Muslim guy. Rather than take a snippet out of context and mistranslate it to create the impression that the religion is just swell, tell the truth about it. Cite it in context. Cite it accurately. If you want to destroy Islam's capacity to commit 99% of the world's acts of terrorism, don't combat it with bullets and bombs. Expose it. Condemn it. Words wielded wisely. Do exactly what the politically correct in America's academic institutions and media and politics don't want you to do, which is to speak in condescending tones against that which is ruthless and evil. Simply tell the truth. And so it's true that the Nigerian military has been completely impotent. They're using the wrong weapons. They are exacerbating the problem. Then it says in this article, he uses his faith to recruit the impressionable and the disenfranchised to his cause. Why doesn't he say he uses Islam? That's his faith, isn't it? Why couldn't they just say he uses Islam? I haven't mentioned Islam all the way through this thus far. He uses Islam to recruit the impressionable. That's the entire basis of religion. If it wasn't for impressionable individuals, there would be no religion. You don't sell a faith based upon evidence and reason. It's called faith because there is no evidence and reason to support it. It is always marketed to those who are impressionable. It's never sold to those who are rational and informed. In fact, being rational and informed is the antidote to keep from being impressed by religion. We'll be back after the ads. Right, as we're talking about this CNN article that is just absolutely insane in their presentation of Boko Haram, saying that he's the face of terror when, you know, he's just an insignificant Muslim amongst a world of 1.5 billion Muslims. A man whose face we've never seen. He says he has a twisted ideology. Well, he doesn't have his own ideology. The twisted ideology that he has is called Islam. You'll find it in the Quran. A sadistic architect of a campaign of mayhem and misery. No, it was actually Muhammad that came up with this sadistic campaign of mayhem and misery. If you want the face of terror, look at Muhammad. They said little is known about him, and yet we know that he's an Islamic cleric. You want to know about an Islamic cleric? Read the Quran. This says that he uses his underlings to orchestrate his repulsive mandates. And yet, he's very clear. He doesn't have a mandate. Allah has a mandate, and he's about imposing Allah's mandates. It says that he uses his faith, and they don't want to say here it's Islam, to recruit the impressionable. We've gone over that. And the disenfranchised to his cause. Well, before we dissect disenfranchised, once again, he doesn't have a cause. Doesn't have a cause. That'd be like saying that George Washington had a cause that he was promoting that was his own personal cause when he led Americans in the Revolutionary War. That's like saying that Patton had a cause when he led the Seventh Army. That would be like saying that General Lee didn't fight on behalf of the interest of Virginia and the South, but he had his own cause. Man doesn't have a cause. He is fighting in Allah's cause. He has embraced the orders and example of Muhammad and his wannabe God Allah. He is fighting in Allah's cause. Read the Quran. Find out what Allah's cause is all about. Juxtapose the presentation of Allah's cause and the Quran with this man's words and deeds. You'll find a perfect match. Now, disenfranchised. Don't we have the media always tell us that that all these organizations are franchised? Didn't we read just yesterday where CNN was was Peter Bergen, that was the one, Peter Bergen of CNN, that he was promoting the myth that Boko Haram was a franchise of Al-Qaeda? But this is now disenfranchised. That would be the lack of a franchise. What does he think, that Islam is not a franchise? That this guy is going outside of the religion, of his religion of Islam, to find people who were disenfranchised from religion? It's nonsense. He's incorporating within the franchise. And the franchise is the religion of Islam. I mean, again, it's like, okay, I can write a word disenfranchised. I can write impressionable. I can write the word faith. I can write recruit, and I can string these words together. And yet everything that is being conveyed is the opposite of what is true. Abu Bakr, this article says, was born in Sheku village. That's why his last name is Sheku. His name is Abu Bakr, but it's Abu Bakr of Sheku. So we just call him Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr is, the reason he's Abu Bakr is because that's the individual within Islam that he identifies with. This man that was willing to sacrifice his 6-year-old daughter, throwing her in bed with a 50-year-old Muhammad. He studied under a cleric. What kind of a cleric do you think? You can write this, actually, CNN. He studied under an Islamic cleric. They call Islamic cleric imams. He studied under a cleric and then attended Borno State College of Legal and Islamic Studies for higher studies on Islam. Islamic studies for higher studies on Islam. That's almost funny. Gee, I wonder what he learned there. Let's see, it was the Islamic studies for higher studies on Islam. Do you think that maybe between the cleric, who was Islamic, and his higher studies on Islamic studies, that he understands Islam, that he's motivated by Islam? He's also known as Darul Tawhid, which translates to an expert in monotheism, or the oneness of Allah. Oh, isn't Allah one? So monotheistic of him. I want to ask you a question. Why is it better to have one false god than many false gods? Or no god at all? I'm just posing a question out there for those listening to this program, because I'm constantly told by Muslims that Muhammad was a great guy because he convinced Arab polytheists to become monotheists. I've always wondered, why is the belief in one false god better than the belief in many false gods or belief in no god? How does it make somebody's better? I mean, what's the purpose of that? I mean, Allah's clearly not God, so why is the study of the oneness of Allah appropriate? Beyond that, Allah's got a bunch of names in the Quran. The first name for Allah in the Quran is happens to be Satan's name, Lord. And the next name for Allah in the Quran is Rahman. In fact, there is a surahs that actually are named Rahman and that speak of Rahman being God's one and only name. And then, of course, when Muhammad got far enough away from the Kaaba in Mecca that he wouldn't be expected for the black stone in the Kaaba that was called Allah, you know, like to perform a miracle, like what, roll over. I guess it was capable of being a weather rock, but to do something beyond being a weather rock. Then he renamed his God from Rahman and the Lord to Allah. But Allah is clearly a false god. Allah is equal parts self-portrait of Muhammad and a characterization of the nature of Satan. That's what he is. You know, if you look at the Roman Empire, which I've been spending a lot of time here doing recently, the Roman Empire got worse when it went from being pagan to Christian, when it went from having the influence of many gods, all false, to the influence of one false god, because they turned Jesus Christ into a caricature modeled after Dionysus. And moving from many gods to one god didn't make them better. They were worse. You look at the caliber of leader and behavior in Rome after it was influenced by Christianity. It got worse, not better. And there is no indication that one God is better than many gods. Now, there happens to be only one God, but he ain't Allah. And he's not Jesus Christ. This next part of this article shows that the writer was in a Build Your Vocabulary club, and the word of the day was polyglot. Now, I'm going to tell you, I've got a decent vocabulary. I must not be in the same club, because I actually had to mouse over polyglot to find that it is a linguist, somebody that speaks many languages. Since I guess they used monotheism in the previous sentence, they would use a word that had poly in it in the next. Polytheist, you know, and so it's a polygamist, you know, which means many, polygamist, many wives. And so a polyglot is somebody that speaks more than one language. So he is a polyglot. Now, why is that material? I'm going to tell you, why is that material? Why do we care? How is speaking more than Arabic and Hausa, the local language, meaningful in this case? What does it contribute to his motivation? His behavior. This tells us that Boko Haram was founded by Muhammad Yusuf. Muhammad Yusuf. Do you think that Muhammad was a Baptist? I don't think so. Do you think Muhammad was a communist? I doubt it. You see, Muhammad was a charismatic, well-educated cleric. Well-educated by what standards? Did he have a PhD in Islamic studies? Do you think that if you spent 6 years in school wallowing in the rubbish of the Quran, that you're better educated than somebody that spends no years wallowing in the rubbish of the Quran? But he was a charismatic, well-educated cleric, and CNN wants you to know the thing that really was interesting about him wasn't his Islamic ambitions. No, it's that he drove a Mercedes. Yes, he drove his Mercedes as part of his push for a pure Islamic state in Nigeria. That's what it says. What's the push? If Nigeria becomes a pure Islamic state, if the whole state capitulates to Islam, there'll be a Mercedes in every driveway? Is he inferring that Muslims invented Mercedes? That they build Mercedes? That Islam will make them rich and prosperous so they'll be able to buy Mercedes? What in the world? I mean, it's just, you just scream when you look at what leading journalists write. It says he wasn't too effective as a leader. Now, wait a minute. It said he was charismatic. And then it said he wasn't effective as a leader. He had a hard time keeping his second-in-command in check, and his second-in-command? Abu Bakr. He says that Abu Bakr was more radical and had grander designs. How is that possible? Muhammad was pushing for a pure Islamic state in Nigeria, where you were either a Muslim in the entirety of Nigeria or you were dead. 50% of the population of Africa's most populous state, nation, isn't Islamic. 50% are Muslims. So what could be a bigger agenda, a more radical agenda, than saying that we're going to eliminate 50% of the population of Nigeria, or we're going to force them, compel them to surrender to Islam so that we can have a pure Islamic state in Nigeria? How could you have a grander, more radical design than that? Do you think that Abu Bakr's quest is to become the head dude in the new revised caliphate that is going to control the world? Surely this masked man isn't the answer to all of Muslim prayers. Well, it says the Nigerian military has touted Abu Bakr's death several times, only to retract its claim after he appeared alive and vibrant in propaganda videos. Yeah, they wouldn't know if they killed him or not. Never did, no idea what it looks like. They said they almost caught him back in September of 2012 when they raided his home where he had snuck in for his six-day-old baby's naming ceremony. He managed to get away with a gunshot wound to his thigh. Oh, so he can be identified now. Just tell him to pull up his robe. His wife and three children were taken away by the military. Ooh, that was stupid. You got a guy that is motivated by Islam to kidnap little girls, to kill women. And you capture his wife and children? Wow. Talk about stupid. Why would you do that? Why would you take a guy that's naturally prone to be mad and make him madder? Why go up to the beehive and kick it? Wow. Unbelievably stupid. Now you want to know why he's taunting everyone and he's kidnapping the little girls and selling them, because it's an Allah's Quran that, and Sharia law that legalizes that, that makes it a grand Islamic joyride, perfectly in concert with Allah's commands. But would he be doing it if the Nigerian army hadn't kidnapped his wife and three children? The Northeast, where Boko Haram has been most active, is economically depressed because that's where most of the Muslims are. I mean, with exception of the few places that that float on oceans of oil, every place Islam infects is economically depressed. That's the reason why the intifadas were called in Israel. Without having access to oil, the Jews made the desert bloom, and they took the Muslims living there along with them. And the Muslims living in Israel became the freest, richest, best educated, healthiest Muslims in the world. And so to demonstrate that, oh boy, couldn't be Islam that was holding Muslims back, they decided to go after and start killing and terrorizing the Jews that had created such a positive lifestyle for the Arab Muslims living in their country. So yeah, it's economically depressed. Among the least educated regions, that's also true with Islam. There isn't one world-class university in the Islamic world. There hasn't been a academic discovery by a Muslim in the past 100 years. And so Abu Bakr has done a good job of convincing residents that the powers are corrupt, and if there's a better system of government, would be strict enforcement of Islamic Sharia law across all of Nigeria. Imagine that. That you're selling people this idea that Sharia law, which is based on Muhammad's words and deeds. Muhammad was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was incestuous. He was a womanizer. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper. He was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. He was sadistic. He was, by his own admission, dishonest and demon-possessed. And that a legal system based entirely on his words and deeds would resolve the problems of corruption. And that that would be a better system. You can see why Islam only prevails among those who are ignorant and irrational. His promise, coupled with a weapon and a license to plunder, has been enticing hundreds of young men. Where do you think he got his license to plunder? Have anyone with CNN ever read the eighth surah of the Quran? Stealing is lawful and good. Have they ever considered where that license to plunder came from? Why Muslims have plundered for 1,400 years? We'll return to Shattering This. The article concludes, the central government's heavy-handed and frequent untargeted anti-terrorism campaign has just helped create more members to sustain Boko Haram. That is absolutely true. The Nigerian government, just as is the American government, is responding in a way that is exacerbating the problem. America is not fighting a war on terrorism. It's creating a war on terrorism. Everything that the Nigerian government has done has been counterproductive, just as everything the American government has done as it relates to fundamentalist Islam and the terrorism it inspires has been counterproductive. Far worse than doing nothing. Yes, there are things worse than doing nothing. Doing that which is counterproductive. Vietnam was worse than doing nothing. It was counterproductive. The invasion of Afghanistan was worse than doing nothing. It was counterproductive. The invasion of Iraq was worse than doing nothing. It was counterproductive. The support for the Islamic terrorist in Libya was far worse than doing nothing. It's counterproductive. Giving weapons to the Sunni Mujahideen in Syria is far worse than doing nothing. It is counterproductive. Supplying the Egyptian government with billions of dollars worth of military hardware is worse than doing nothing. It is counterproductive. There are things we can do that would be productive, like to shed our ignorance, to learn the truth, to do a study of the evidence and then apply reason to what you discover, and then to have the backbone to stand up and tell the truth, to expose and condemn the individuals and the doctrines that are so merciless. That's what we can do to prevail. But when we choose instead to use our military and to use police and to fight a religious foe with bullets and bombs, we will always make the situation worse. The country's own Human Rights Commission last year accused the military of arbitrary killings, torture, and rape in its campaign against the group. This makes for a fertile territory for Boko Haram. Absolutely. Yeah, their whole article. They got something right. We have Larry on the line, and since I was about to mock chemtrails again, Larry, you stopped me from doing that. I just received a letter, and I was about to give my conclusions regarding chemtrails. But perhaps you'll tell me that the Jesuits, who you focus on a lot, and I'm not a fan of the Jesuits either, that they're really the mechanism behind that plot.
I personally think that there is something to chemtrails. I mean, they've measured them.
Goodness, Larry, don't go there.
Yeah, I know. And I disagree.
We disagree. Chemtrails has to be the dumbest of all conspiracy theories. I mean, that's worse than Building 7. I mean, the conspiracy theory that swirled around Building 7 and the World Trade Center. I mean, that one's dumb, but chemtrails, gotta be dumber. Gotta be the dumbest, dumbest conspiracy theory ever issued. And I tell you what, I'd go to the mat.
Even though there's people out there that actually have worked in those planes that have openly stated it.
Oh, of course, yeah, uh-huh, yeah. I would, you know, the guys that promote these kind of theories that say, yeah, I was there. I think there's even a book that's published by a guy that was head of the FBI. And that he's, as a head of the FBI, must be a truth teller. This very government that's lying to us, but the FBI, the head of the FBI, he's a truth teller. And he says, yeah, there really is chemtrails. They're poisonous. Well, that's why all the little fishies are dying. That's why the little birds are dying. Oh, my God, they're out to get us. That condensation trails out of the jet engine. That's poison.
You know, I live right here near an international airport and three different military bases.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And for days and days and days, we sit and we have blue skies. And then for about 5 days in a row, they'll just be, looks like a tic-tac-toe board. Uh-huh. Same planes are flying.
Uh-huh.
Why do you suppose that is?
Because of the temperatures. There's when you fly
a
jet.
In the middle of the summer.
Yeah, when you fly a jet, one of the things you learn is that temperature isn't constant, not even at altitude. And then one day, you can be at 35,000 feet. And it's minus 35 Celsius. And 2 days later, you can fly at 35,000 feet, and it's minus 5 Celsius. And the amount of contrail is going to differ based upon the temperature.